This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
How you doing, Mike? Haven't seen you for a while.
Well, I'm cool right now. The parking lot is very hot.
Oh, indeed it is.
I know. They missed the temperature guess, though.
It's
89 out there, and it's supposed to only be, what, 84 or something like that?
Well, we have 85 now.
Yeah, in this room, maybe. But in my truck in the parking lot, it said 89.
Yeah, my car said 92, but it cooled off immediately as I started
down
to drive it.
Down to 90, huh?
Yeah. Jeez.
I think summer might have arrived.
Yay, finally. Yeah.
Well, you know, I like my perfect summer, it would be 84.
Yeah.
You know, top temperature. I mean, you can actually work and walk and breathe when it's 84 versus 94 or 104.
Oh, Lord. Yep.
You know, all that blah humbug. Anyway.
What's new in the world of plants?
Oh, they're all out there living. I cruised around Douglas County for a while before I got here, and
nice.
Everything is growing well. And saw, you know, a couple million trees and surveyed them, and they look good. They were green.
Nice.
They had leaves, that kind of thing.
They're not dying this year.
Oh, not yet. Not yet. Anyway, this is a lawn and garden show, and it is a show that talks about various subjects and hopefully gives people that are listening some advice and ideas on how to make their landscape nicer, prettier, healthier, more attractive to whatever. And it's open to questions. If you have a question about anything, 673-4464. We'll get you right in here. You can ask your question, and I'll actually give you a nice answer, and I won't yell at you or anything. And I don't care what party you come from or anything like that. You know, we're talking plants, man. We're talking shrubs, trees, flowers, that kind of thing. So, at any rate, actually, the show you listened to last week, that wasn't me. That was a replay. That was from months ago or something.
Encore.
Well, yeah, whatever that means.
Like
I'm supposed to know that.
By popular demand.
Oh, yes, for sure. Okay, so just when you think you've heard all... Capital Press every week. The Capital Press is a Northwest agricultural newspaper. Talks about ag and the problems that the government foists on the farmers and ranchers and the timber cutters and all that. And
our governor must be in there every now and then.
Well, she's been mentioned. but usually it's from a national scope.
Oh.
But because some of the people from back east also like to chime in, like they know what we're doing and how to make our life be better.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, it covers Washington, Oregon, in California, Idaho, a little bit of Montana, Wyoming, just maybe some Colorado once in a while if there's a cattle issue or a sheep issue or something like that. But it talks about crops and it talks about wolf packs and, you know, all kinds of things.
Covers the whole
gamut. And it's very interesting, and I learn a lot from it. And it's interesting to read that other people are, you know, having challenges in their agricultural life and lifestyle and livelihoods due to government intervention.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, I'm trying to be nice. We're on the air.
Yeah.
But I saw this one article, and I had to read it a couple of times and then just kind of shorten it up and share it with my audience today. It's okay. Interesting, to say the least.
All right.
Yeah. And, you know, just when you think you have heard all the stupid things that so-called experts say, another piece of wisdom comes out. My words. The Capital Press is an agricultural oriented newspaper. Comes out, like I said, once a week. And I learn something new each week that, you know, helps me in my business or helps me understand what's kind of going on with the state and the feds and all that and more restrictions, etc. But this article appeared in the June 17th edition. And here is the bold print headline on the article, on the Capital Press article. It says, quote, "A bee is not a fish except in California," unquote. And I read that about 16 times to make sure I was actually seeing the words. and the article went on to talk about how, well, the California appeals court has ruled that a bumblebee can be a fish.
Really?
Now, think about that. A court of appeals said a bumblebee can be a fish as defined by California Endangered Species Act.
Only in California.
Yes. Now, if you can envision this as we go along, I would like to hear from you. And the Defenders of Wildlife petitioned the California Fish and Game Commission to list 4 bumblebee species for protection under the Endangered Species Act. So the Fish and Game Commission responded by voting to begin the listing process in 2019. And they were sued by 7 agricultural groups, including the California Farm Bureau Federation. And the California Supreme Court ruled in favor of the farm groups in 2020. So they try to list it. This group tries to list it. The California Supreme Court unlisted it. But last month, the California 3rd District Court of Appeals reversed the Supreme Court and is now allowing bumblebees to be classified as fish.
Are they morons?
Totally. A fish is whatever we say it is. That's a quote.
That's a quote?
That's a quote from the article.
There's something, aren't they?
A fish is whatever we say it is.
Okay. So somebody needs a new job.
Yeah. So in 1970, when the Endangered Species Act became law, a fish was a fish, and a bee was a bee.
That's right.
Come on, man. But most people can tell the difference between a fish and a bumblebee. And who knew that the court didn't know what the difference was between a fish and a bumblebee?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder what the bumblebees are thinking. Huh? They can't even swim, you know? And perhaps because a bumblebee, if it hits the water, it drowns.
They can't
get back out, you know?
Yeah, so they're fish bees.
Fish? Yeah. Maybe that's what they were trying to get across. I'm not sure. But perhaps, and this is my words, now a bumblebee can be considered a flying fish.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
It could be the world's smallest flying fish. Even a 6-year-old child knows that a bee is not a fish, you know, or a 4-year-old. And I have seen real flying fish, and they do not look like bumblebees. And when you're sitting in your backyard and a bumblebee is flying around your face, you can be thankful that it's not a great white shark.
They will bite, though.
Oh, they will. They can. But, you know, come on. My goodness.
I know.
Okay. But that's California. Mm. That's what the endangered species.
Maybe a little too much.
Well, yeah, they've been using their product a lot, I think. Somebody has. I mean, yeah. Come on. A bee, a bumblebee is a fish. Is there anybody out there listening to me right now that thinks a bumblebee is a fish? If you do, please call.
Yeah, let us know. Let us know.
Yeah, 673-4464. Oh, gosh. I read the article twice, and I shared it with about as many people as I could, and they all looked at me blankly and said, what?
Yeah.
Okay. Jeez.
Well, at least we're not all stupid as they are.
Apparently not, but I think I'm going to sue for making Komodo dragons a fish now.
There you go.
You know, what the heck? They're more likely. Okay, back
Can
to...
Can they even swim? I don't know.
Yeah, they do. They live
do
in,
they?
Yeah, they go in the water.
Oh, okay.
And they're big, ugly things, and they'll eat you if they get the chance.
They remind me of somebody I was married to.
Oh, well, we won't get into this part. This is a garden show, kind of. Okay, back to real life. All these blooming shrubs you're seeing all over the place, and a lot of them have, you know, finished blooming, need to be pruned and shaped now for proper growth for the summer. That's basically anything that's a spring bloomer. When the blooms finally stop and the new growth on the branches begin, and you're watching this shrub that's supposed to be, 3 feet tall in your front yard, and it's approaching 4.5 feet, and you're thinking, gee whiz, that thing is growing really fast. Well, you're taking good care of it, obviously. Don't be afraid to prune that to the 3 foot level or even lower if you want to, and maintain that. But don't do it before the bloom. Let it bloom, enjoy the blooms, enjoy the color, and then when it begins to sprout its new growth, go ahead and prune it. You can prune it now, you can prune it in July, you can prune it in August, for crying out loud. But keep it doing that way. And I've talked about rhododendrons, when you're supposed to prune them and that kind of thing, and I'll probably hit on that a little bit too here, because my mind wanders when I'm doing this show. But don't be afraid to shape it. And don't be afraid to cut it. It's okay. Again, if it's like cutting your fingernails, it doesn't hurt, doesn't kill you, it doesn't damage you. And if you don't prune and shape a little bit every year, soon you have this overgrown wild shrub blocking your front door, or you're hanging over in your driveway because, I should have pruned that. Yeah, you should have. Don't delay anymore. Get out there with some shears, some hand pruners, or whatever you might have, and go out there and start cutting it back to the size that you want it to be maintained at, and keep it that way. Yep. It'll be healthier. It won't intrude on your house. It won't intrude in your driveway. It won't slap you in the face when you walk by the branches. You are the master of your yard and universe in your yard. So act like it, for crying out loud, and don't worry about the bumblebees. They're fish. They can't get you. But if you don't, like I say, if you don't prune it every year a little bit, it's this overgrown green thing that's wild. It might be pretty, but it's an inconvenience. It gets in the way. And then if you get into the habit of not pruning it, 2 or 3 years down the road, you're going to get a landscaper like myself to take that thing out of here. It's crazy. I don't like it. In fact, I have a client right now, nice person, that I landscaped her home, maybe 10 or 15 years ago. I can't even remember.
Oh, geez.
You know, one of those low maintenance, a lot of gravel and some pretty plants. And I threw a red lava stone pathway winding through it, you know, and it's, I mean, no maintenance. You don't have to do anything to it, except prune it once in a while. Uh-huh. Well, either she didn't want to prune it, or she doesn't know how to prune it. But I was called to her house, and she showed me what she wanted us to do, and to take out this, and this, and this. And I said, well, we can prune them and get them back into shape. She said, yeah, but they'll just grow back. I said, well, yeah, but if you prune it at least every other year at a minimum, you can keep them, you know, to the size you like. Nope. Take them out. I want something smaller. So, yeah, okay, whatever you say.
She's done with them.
You're the boss. The only problem is they are, you know, fairly mature and fairly, you know, sizable. Mm-hmm. They're only maybe 3 feet tall, but they're probably 4 feet around. They're dwarf Mugo pines, and they're gorgeous. And this time of year, if I take them out, I don't know what the survivability is going to be.
Yeah.
Because it's a big plant, so it has a big root system. And if it's 90 degrees, it's going to be a real struggle. I'm going to try to save them. I don't know if it'll happen. I've saved lots of stuff that way. But I've saved rhododendrons from mid-July that I've talked about that on the radio show, and I'm going to try to do them because they're a gorgeous plant. Mm-hmm. But she just doesn't like them because they're too big. And you know, she's the boss. I mean, that's her place, and I will do whatever that lady wants me to do.
She knows what she wants.
Absolutely, and I'm not going to argue with her. She's very nice. So, do we have a break?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Hey, that's pretty good timing in my head, you know?
It is.
I got to do your breaks, too.
Yes, you got to keep me on my toes.
I'm trying.
We'll be right back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Alrighty, we are back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And in case you didn't hear the first segment, I talked about the bumblebee and the fish being one and the same, and it should be... The bumblebee should be on the endangered species list via the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
So you can listen on, what do you call that?
The podcast.
Podcast, yeah, I'm sorry. 541radio.com.
I think there's too much sun and other things in California.
There probably is too much of a lot of things, but I won't go there.
Okay.
Okay, so... And I've been talking about, you know, the pruning again, because things are growing and you want to keep them in balance and you don't want them to, you know, run through your doorway or branches in your window and so you can't see out. So prune them. It's okay. They will love it, you know. And like I say, there's some very large rhododendrons around the town that need to be pruned. And when I say they need to be pruned, they're like, you know, 12, 15 feet tall, some of these things.
Mama.
At some of the older homes down across the river down there, behind the old Mercy Hospital. What's that?
Laurelwood.
Laurelwood, yeah. And they're beautiful when they're blooming, and they're great, and they look like really cool trees. But there's, you know, some ancillary branches could be pruned out and maybe topped a little bit, you know. And I think some of them look really good, and they look like some kind of an exotic tree. And they're obviously, gosh, 75 years old or something like that.
Wow.
I don't know. That's a guess on my part.
Yeah.
But when they're in bloom, they're outrageous. But then the blooms fall off, and you can start to see the branching patterns. And there's a lot of branches in there that could be eliminated, and it could, like I say, be topped down or pruned away from your front door a little bit so you could get in without, you know, having to walk through a rhododendron. But it's okay. You can do it. It's all right. And this is the prime time, like I said in past, to prune rhodies and still have blooms for next spring. If you prune rhodies in the fall or the winter, you will be cutting off all the bloom buds. Because the bloom buds, they come on about July, August, and they're just at the tips of the branches, and they're elliptical in shape, and they're probably about as big around as your thumb. Mm-hmm. And if you prune in the winter, you're pruning most of those off, and so consequently the following spring you've got no flowers. So now is the time to do the pruning for the rhodies, and you'll still have flowers for next year. So if you want to shorten them up, go ahead and do it. Cut them at whatever height you want. If you want to thin them out, go ahead and do it. If you want to cut them away from your house, it's okay, because they'll still look good, they'll still grow, and they'll still bloom for next year. But once you cut the buds off, they don't reform the buds, you know, and like in the winter, all of a sudden reform them because they're dormant, for crying out loud. And you'll just not have any flowers. And if that doesn't bother you, that's okay. You know, the following year after that, they'll bloom okay. So, like I say, it buds through the summer, and that's when they develop. And all those spring flowers Will be beautiful next year. But if you cut them off in the do the pruning and stuff in the winter or in the fall, you know, bingo, you've lost all your flowers. So don't do it again. And but again, I want you now. The opposite goes with the shrubs, the minor shrubs, like forsythia or you know, some quinces or any of those shrubs that bloom really pretty in the early spring. They're done now, so go ahead and prune them. They'll be fine, and they'll come back and rebloom last year, you know, very profusely. They'll have more new growth to bloom on, and that's the cycle. The people in general fear any pruning that takes place in the spring or summer, thinking it's going to kill the plant.
Right.
It will not kill the plant. It will just thicken the plant. It will invigorate the growth of the plant, because when the plant thinks it's been wounded, i.e. it's been pruned, so it's been wounded, part of it's been wounded, it puts like a super energizer bunny at its roots or whatever it is.
Yep.
And really pushes nice new luscious growth for the following year. Because like all living things, it wants to live. It doesn't want to die by the wayside. So, and then flowering, like I said, those are the flowering types. Now the evergreen types of shrubs have a different pruning timetable. Mm. Actually, you can do light pruning anytime and not hurt the shrub. You know, when I'm talking dwarf pines or dwarf spruces or photinia, the red leaf monster plant that people plant as hedges, that's okay. Heavy pruning on evergreens is a wintertime thing, and they'll do okay. If you're cutting off branches that are, say, larger than a half a dollar in diameter, it's good to do it in the wintertime, because this time of year they're pumping sap, they're pumping juice into their, from the roots to the limbs, and if you cut it off, you know, now, it the pump still keeps going, and then it could weaken the plant to where it just got sick, or it could even go as far, depends on how hard you pruned it, it could actually die because it's the wrong time to do it. And these are important things to remember. And if you don't remember what I said, get a book on pruning from one of the box stores. They have all those magazines there as you walk in, you know, anywhere from how to repair your carburetor to how to prune your rhododendron and how to raise rabbits, for crying out loud. Just look for the pruning booklet, and it will show you illustrations. It will have lots of paragraphs on how to do it and how not to do it, but it shows you a before and after pictures of this is what it looked like and this is what it looked like after it was pruned. So you get a good idea.
Yeah.
And you can see it and understand it. I mean, that's the kind of way I am, is I want to see something done, and when I see it done, I get it. You know, you can explain it to me, but if you're an expert and I don't know what you're talking about, I'm lost. So I try to make this as simplified as I can. We got a call.
We do have a call. Hi, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hi, Mike. I was just listening. I didn't know if you had mentioned laurel. I bought some baby laurels from your nursery 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
They're now... I want to say 6 feet,
and I is that where,
so
you want them?
I wanted them 6 feet.
Okay,
so,
good.
So should I trim them now?
Well, yeah, you won't hurt them if they're intruding into the driveway or the yard or something. You can.
No, they're not. They're great. I just want to get them shaped. And
are they misshapen in some way?
Yeah, well, I mean, on the sides, they're coming out, but they're at the perfect height of where I want them.
Okay.
So,
well, just prune the sides and just stand back and you know, and look at them the long ways and say, okay, I got to take that branch out, and that way you can go ahead and prune them. And if you have to reprune some next month, go ahead and do it. Touch it up, because you're not taking a major branch out. You're, you know, in the height and where you pruned it, there's that branch is missing. So the energy that used to go to that branch will go to your height. And if that's what you want, then you're in good shape.
Yeah, I just want a privacy. It's a privacy fence,
sure.
Intentionally.
Yeah.
So I just didn't want to trim them and then kill them.
No, you won't. They are okay. So tough. Okay. And we have clients that we, I've got two clients I'm thinking of right now. They have those huge, huge hedges on their in their side yard and the backyard. And sometimes we can prune them early. Sometimes it's the middle of summer. Sometimes it's in the fall.
Okay.
And I've pruned them at almost every month you can think of. And they don't even slow down.
Okay, they have not. Laurel has a bloom, right?
Well, it has a small bloom, and it's not real significant, but it's probably already bloomed
okay,
out.
Okay, I don't have any blooms right now.
Okay. Look at it real carefully, and if you see any like little tiny buds that are, say the size of a BB or something like that, that might be some flower buds, and you might want to just let it bloom and then cut it. It doesn't matter one way or another.
Okay. Yeah, I do want them to get real thick. But I do also know when I bought them at the nursery that you have to take good care of them or they'll just get out of
yes,
hand.
They will. They so, can. They're a wild yeah. bunch.
Not in my yard, they won't.
There you go. You be an example. You be an example for the neighborhood.
That's right. That's
okay,
right. Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks
okay,
for the
bye
call.
Bye.
Bye.
And watch out for that bumblebee fish.
Yeah, they're flying around in the gutter right now.
We'll be right back.
Oh, gosh.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, we're up to 88 degrees now, according to the National Weather Service.
Oh, yeah. Well, they should know. They don't live here.
That's true.
Yeah. You know, I mean, of course they know what we're doing and what we're saying and thinking. And
they know all about our country.
Yeah, and they like bumblebees.
That's right. So much so they classify them as fish.
Yeah, and they're an endangered species. Okay. All right. I was talking about pruning things and all that. And it's. I think we've... covered that topic well. So if you don't hear me say anything again about pruning until about October or November, don't worry.
Oh, I'll I thought you were talking about bumblebees.
No, bumblebees, I mean, hey, if you do prune in the winter, you don't have to worry about bumblebees because they're sleeping.
They're sleeping. Yeah, they're hibernating.
Yeah, they're hibernating. They're dormant.
Oh, yeah.
In their little nests.
Don't fish do the same thing?
Yeah, they do. They kind of sit still in the water.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, now, it seems like these warm day weather stuff is here, or the beginning of here. So we're going to talk about watering, and watering plants and lawns, should get scheduled watering. Yes, and speaking of watering... my partner here is getting me a glass of water. That's good. But, you need to schedule your watering. You need to look at your watering system, if it's a sprinkler system. If it's a hose, no problem. That's the easy part. I have hoses at my home. I install sprinkler systems for clients, but I have hoses at my home. You figure that one out. But in any way, it's time to begin to turn them on. And take a look at the, just take a look at how your system is operating. Is it operating the way it should? But is it missing something? Is it not getting the edges? Or is it, did you run over with a lawnmower last fall and all of a sudden it's just a geyser in the middle of your lawn or the middle of your shrub bed? You know, those are kinds of things that you... this time of year you need to look at. You can't just go into the garage and flip the switch to automatic and get in your car and drive away, because you haven't seen what it's actually doing. And there's always, it always seems as though there's at least minor wear and tear, even in the winter when they're not operating for some reason. I don't know whether they get stomped on, the bugs eat them, or you drive over them. I don't understand what it is. But there's always something that's out of whack. You know, it's not spraying in the right direction. It's not popping up. It's not rotating. The sprinkler head's not rotating. And these are the kinds of things on a nice warm day like this. You flip the switch and you know, you're in your shorts and your T-shirt and you walk out there. And if you see something that's not operating right, you try to discern what it is. Maybe it's a clogged nozzle, because debris gets in there. Grass will get in there, clog things up. Or there might be a little bit of sand or a tiny stone. And you need to take off the top of the sprinkler head and flush it out and put it back together, reset it in the direction that you want it to water, and go from there. But now is a good time to do that. I mean, don't wait till, you know, even though we've had good rainy spring, we've had a good long rainy spring. In fact, we're 2 inches over normal for June in rainfall right now, which I think is great. And we're like 2.3 inches, 2.8 something, and the normal at this time of year is 0.8. So we're good to go. But the sprinkler stuff, the watering stuff, is vitally important as we progress into the hotter days of summer. Hopefully it won't be like last summer, because I was miserable last summer. I mean, it's just it. When it gets to 95, I'm toast. I mean, I want to be a bumblebee, you know, or a fish or something like that. Oh, jeez Louise.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. But just remember, when you're doing this, you want to set the time. If it's on a timer, you want to set it properly. When you're planting this time of year, and you got a new shrub or a new young tree, you might have to water it by hand for the first month to make sure it gets sufficient moisture into the root ball. And after that, if it's on a sprinkler system, well, then it works. It's okay. But at least it has enough moisture in that root ball, in those new roots, to continue to grow and root in and become solidified with the earth, if you will. And then the sprinkler system can take over, and you're pretty good to go.
Nice.
But this is only done with newly planted materials, you know. With annuals and perennials, you're going to water more often, simply because flower roots are shallow and they're not as large, and so they need a little bit more water, especially in a good draining soil. Excuse me. You want some petunias, geraniums, and those kinds of things for color. That's great. I love it. I do it all the time. But you got to make sure you pay attention to that, and pay attention to the soil moisture, you know, by sticking your finger in there. Is it damp? Is it dry? Whatever. If it's dry, yeah, you got to water. If it's damp, you don't have to water.
You're great.
And once you get to know your yard, and, you know, in the sunny places is going to dry out a little quicker, and the shady places is going to it's going to contain the moisture longer. Mm.
Yeah.
So you have to make these adjustments accordingly. You cannot just wholesale water the yard the same way on each zone for each type of plant or lawns. There has to be some thoughtfulness in what you're doing. And I only talk about water overwatering 100 times a year at least.
Like on sidewalks?
Yeah, sidewaks and streets where it's hitting. Make sure it's not doing that, because you're paying for that water that's hitting that sidewalk or the street or the parked car. And of course, I was going to say the media, but I probably won't.
Oh, okay.
but when we hear about water shortages, when we hear about the price of water and those kinds of things, you want to make your sprinkler system the most efficient part of your yard operation that you possibly can.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm saying here, is just look at them, make sure they're doing their job, and time it correctly. It doesn't, if it's a shrub zone, you don't turn it on for an hour, you know, twice a week. You don't do that. Maybe a half an hour every other week or so, unless it gets really hot, and then you might do it every week 45 minutes early in the morning before the sun gets up or after the sun goes down so that you don't have the evaporation occurring so that half of the water is not even hitting the ground. It's being evaporated into the sky and turns into a cloud sometime for November rainfall. But you want to, I don't know what people pay for water in town anymore.
I don't either.
Because I operate out of a spring,
yeah.
You know, and that kind of thing. So I don't I don't pay for water. But I look at it. I gauge my water supply. I look at my water supply every day and make sure that there's sufficient there, that mm-hmm. we're not overwatering, which we're not even watering at this point. But to run the household, we've got more water than we could ever use. So we'd have to open the hose bibs and let them run 24/7 for 2 months before we'd run out of water.
Such was not the case last year.
No, it wasn't. It was not. And yeah. we were very miserly on our water mm-hmm. use. And because my wife has potted plants, we have plants in the ground too, but the potted plants need more water than those in the ground. And so we watered those sparingly, and my bonsai collection has very little root, very little room, small, shallow pot, and so that has to be watered fairly regularly in the hot part of the summer, like every day. But each bonsai pot only takes maybe a quart of water, maybe, or a pint, you know, somewhere in there. And so watering every day is not a big drag on our water supply.
Yeah.
But you get a pot that's a 3 feet deep and 2 feet across, and you've got some kind of exotic Japanese maple or, you know, something that's really neat. You can water those probably once a week at the most and get by, and you'll be okay just as long as it has drain holes in it, but just don't turn it into a swamp. Damp is good enough,
yep.
and that's all you want to do. But that's one of the important criterias for plant health. You know, I talked about pruning in the last segments. Well, watering properly, fertilizing properly, whether it be plants, shrubs, or lawns, or petunias, you need to know what the balance is. You need to know how much water to put on, when to put it on, how much fertilizer to use, what type of fertilizer to use, and you'll have, if you really do your homework, you'll have a beautiful garden. If you just kind of get what's on sale and throw a handful on it, you might have a lot of dead plants hanging around too. So there's a learning curve in here that if you want a nice landscape, you're going to have to educate yourself on how do things grow, what do plants need, what do certain plants need that other plants don't need. And there is that, because like I said in the earlier segment, when we're talking about evergreens like conifers, like pines and firs and spruces and things like that, mm-hmm. they are very, very tough. It's easy to get by. Once they're established, you never have to water them again. I mean, that's how tough they are.
Nice.
Versus azaleas, which have to, you know, they're a surface rooter, so they have to have, you know, moist ground in which to grow and which to survive. But they're diametrically opposed in their need for water and also in their need for fertilization, because like a pine tree or a fir tree, cedar tree, etc., that has a massive root system, covers a lot of ground underneath that you can't see, and it can derive what it needs for nutrition from the soil. Whereas a petunia or a geranium, that root system is very shallow, and it doesn't go down to where the real nitty-gritty ingredients and food is.
Yeah.
So you do have to to have a fertilization program, and it can be a granular type, but you just have to be careful that you don't put too many granulars around one of those flowers. I've burned them up. I know what I'm talking about. I've killed them. this ought to make that puppy grow. Yeah, boom. But 3 days later, it was brown.
Burning up in love.
Yeah, it went to plant heaven, man. Whereas the other alternative to that powdered fertilizer, the granular fertilizer, is a liquid fertilizer. and you mix it with water, and you water it in on the plant, especially with container plants and flowers and fuchsias and those kinds of things. Do we have a break?
We do.
You got your finger on the trigger.
Here we go.
Maybe that was my misspoke.
Nah. We'll be right back with News Radio 93.9 and 1240 KQEN with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty. We are back for our final segment right here on this very warm Wednesday afternoon with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show.
And is it getting what? You got a call?
No, oh. I was going to say in the number.
Oh, 673-4464. And we will have a conversation, and I will tell you what I think, and you tell me what your problem is. It's simple.
It's still 88.
88 degrees? Oh, gosh, that's not bad.
No.
Right. Not bad if you're whatever.
Air conditioner.
Bumblebee.
Bumblebee. Or a fish. That's even better. You're in the water.
Yeah, they're okay. They're different, aren't they? Lawns, of course, in the last segment I was talking about watering and adjusting your sprinkler and you know, how much shrubs and trees need. I mean, I didn't cover it in detail. That was a general covering, okay? I'll be a little more specific in lawns because there seems to be a lot of lawns around here in Douglas County. So they're kind of a different story. You know, you have to, when the weather starts to turn, you got to water lawns at least twice a week for at least 30 minutes per time. If you don't do 30 minutes, and it just doesn't get down into the root systems, and there's several reasons why it doesn't get down into the root systems. Like if your lawn is old, like 5 years old or more, you might have to water three times per week. And the reason for this is that older lawns have a buildup of dried grass, because when you mow and your mower is supposed to be picking up all the grass clippings, there's a number of them, a small percentage of them, that doesn't get sucked up. It just fades back down into the lawn. Well, after about 5 or 6 years goes by, we call it thatch, because when water hits it and you've got a thatch problem, and I've said this before many times, the water does not penetrate the lawn, does not get down into the root system, so consequently you start to get brown patches through your lawn and you can't figure it out. My gosh, you know, I fertilized it and all that, but the problem is the fertilizer, very little of the fertilizer and very little of the water actually can penetrate the thatch. Wow. You know, picture a thatched roof in the tropics. They repel water. Mm-hmm. Thatch in the grass repels water.
Yep.
It could be green on either side of a 3 foot brown patch, but if you went up to the brown patch and started combing through it, you'd see it was just solid thatch. And until you clear that, until you open it up, there's no water going to penetrate, and there's no lawn going to look good, and mm-hmm. it's going to just continue to spread. So,
and those bugs come on, don't they? What are they called?
The what now?
Those little wormy type bugs.
Grubs. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Grubs love old lawns. They love to eat them, too. Yeah. Yeah. But at any rate, if you're watering your lawn, you know, like 30 minutes per watering, you do it in early morning, you know, prior to sunrise maybe, or just at sunrise before the heat of the day hits it, because otherwise the water evaporates into the sky and doesn't actually hit the grass. And don't ever water on an 80 degree afternoon in full sun, because you're wasting your water and you're consequently wasting your money, and your lawn is not benefiting at all.
Like today.
Like today, for instance. You wouldn't want to be out there watering in 90 degree weather or 88 or
88,
whatever.
Close enough.
Yeah. Now, in a very shady area, instead of 88, it might be 85, and there's not direct sun on it, you could get away with watering a little bit, but still there's going to be evaporation because it's still in the 80-degree range.
Yeah.
And you're not seeing the evaporation, but it's happening. And I've spoken in the past about a lot of these businesses, for instance, on Garden Valley Boulevard or Harvard, that have a small strip of lawn out in front of them. And at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, as I drive by, they're watering the snot out of them, and it's a waste of water. Mm-hmm. It's a waste of money, and it's not doing the lawn any good. So you have to get on schedule with your watering scheme if you want a healthy lawn. So I think next week, I don't know how much time we have here.
Couple of minutes. Yeah.
Couple of minutes. Next week I'll talk about thatch a little bit more and what to do and how to, excuse me, how to rectify it and how to keep it from happening. And it's really simple. And if you just make sure that your mower is properly working and it's doing the thing by sucking the grass that you're cutting, sucking up into the bag. And even when you've gone over the lawn once, you might go over it another time to get any stray pieces of grass and just keep it as clean as you can. And if you start to see thatch build up, in other words, you're walking across the lawn and it feels kind of spongy, mm-hmm. that means there's a thatch build up in there. Mm. Get a garden rake out and just rake through it. Now, if the whole lawn is that way, you're going to have to rent some equipment from Roseburg Rentals or one of those places and get in there with a power machine and thatch it. It just combs out all that stuff. But if you only got little pieces, like I say, a garden rake, just get in there and comb through it and open it up so that when it is fertilized, when it is watered, that can get down into the root systems that are always under the ground waiting to be watered and fed. So that's as simple as it gets.
Nice.
That's right. And if go out, take a look at your lawn as soon as you
as soon as this program is over,
go out there and say, wow, man, I got those brown patches, and then walk on them and feel it. It'll feel cushiony. It won't feel hard. And you can almost bounce on it. I mean, you can just kind of little
trampoline.
Bounce on it, and then you can walk into the area where you see no brown spots, and the grass feels more solid.
Yeah,
you know, it's more down to earth, if you will.
love it.
Is it?
That's it.
Bye bye, everybody.
See you next time.
Hey.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.